kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining as usual, Cole, how are you doing?
I guess I'm too tired to hide too much of my accent tonight, so we're gonna,
no one
we're
knows that fine. Yet. We're at the start of the show.
About to know. Look, I'm just going ahead and prefacing it because it's already slipped a couple of times, and I'm like, jeez. I don't know if I ain't got the motivation to hide this shit tonight.
She's letting it oil hang out.
Yeah, the oil hanging out. All over Louisville.
Oh, Jesus.
Might have to go up to Ohio and see what
I was just going to say. Maybe you got to go up to Ohio.
See what's going up.
What else could we talk about from the pre-show that no one else is going to understand what the fuck we're talking about on this show?
That's Guatemalan insanity peppers.
That's ooh, that's why if you check out our Patreon.
Yeah.
Memories. Next week is the end of the year shit. So then we can't talk about the rise and fall of SML efforts until next week.
Yeah, we're gonna be taken out back behind the woodshed and put down for a little bit.
Yeah.
Take a long nap for the winter.
We're zombie motherfuckers, though. We just keep coming back, like, you know, give us about 28 days. And then we're like, your period. We're like, surprise, bitches!
Oh, God.
You thought we was gone, but it was me.
Oh, God. Is that a subject we need to get into on this show?
I mean, it's a period piece, so you may as well.
There's your title.
Oh, God. Period.
Writing it down.
Yes, oh. I wrote it down.
Oh, mercy.
So how's everyone doing? Pernell and Chris are here. It's a party cast. Tim's going to be here later on in the show. We're going to wrap up everything with him. You guys weren't there for that, but you know, I'm just giving people a taste of what's to come. But how are you guys doing?
Honestly, this is one of those rare times where I'm actually playing the game, one of the games I'm reviewing during the episode, I'm fine, but because it's got me, it's got me by the balls. but aside from that, I saw somebody post an article in that group I mentioned earlier in the pre-show. It's like a politics group, but the thing was about a guy who went to DC with based off of like a Tinder date and he was about to, you know, get his magic going, and his girl was like, did you vote for Trump? And apparently that was his cue to leave. So he left and then wrote like 10 Twitter posts about how he drove down like the parkway that runs along like the Potomac River. I can't remember the name of George Washington Parkway. And then just sat and stood at the river contemplating that there has to be, like, he's fighting the good fight for the country, da-da-da-da-da. And it was just like a magic major troll where I was like, geez, if this guy can get a date on freaking Bumble and Tinder, what the fuck am I doing? Jesus Christ. Oh, my God. Like, it put me in a place, guys, that I don't understand.
Do you need to drive down the Potomac and just go stare at the horizon? For a minute.
Apparently I do.
Clearly you need to date Trump supporters? Question mark.
Don't do that. Nobody should do that.
It's the other way around. It was he
Trump
left
supporters should date you. Okay.
No. The story was that he left because the girl he was seeing would have been mad if he admitted to voting for him. So that
we
was
were
why
just confused because the idea of a Trump supporter thinking.
Yeah, that one kind of threw me off. This whole thing took a turn for the worst. I don't understand.
Liverwurst?
I don't understand where we're supposed to like come to grips with this. The Trump supporter and thought are not concepts that coincide.
Yeah, I was extremely baffled by this. And I was like, after this episode, I was like, I'm gonna have to go use Bumble for a bit, because quite frankly, if that jackass can do it, clearly I need to try a little harder, because fuck.
That's where the lefties are.
FarmersOnly.com, man. That's yeah.
That will definitely land you in Trump supporter hell. You might get your rocks off, but
I like voting for a man who kills my soy crop and makes it so that I can't actually ship it. And then doesn't provide me with any actual benefits financially to get by. That's a hero.
That's how, though, like, you ever wonder, wow, I don't know if I should go down this train of thought. I already started.
Well, now you have to.
You ever wonder, like, how sadists and masochists find each other, and it's really just one's a liberal and one's a conservative, and they're just like, yep, this is a relationship. That's how that happens. Like, you just, if you're incredibly, incredibly left-leaning, and you're just like, I'm a little bit of a masochist, though. What am I supposed to do? And then you just go sign up for Farmers Only.
I love the idea of someone going on to Farmers Only and hate fucking everybody.
Jesus.
Like, what do you think of Trump supporters? Fuck them. Fuck them all. Literally at FarmersOnly.com.
There's the jingle. You got to get that to tune. You got to get Nora going here just to write that up real quick.
Hey, Joe, you missed your calling. You should be writing commercials.
No.
Do your Christian Mingle one.
Do that. Oh, Christ on a bike.
You got to use a red, white, and blue dildo on all my fingers to the set.
Jesus.
She's like, I can go.
Got me. Little stars on the ball.
Stars on the ball. Oh, Jesus. This show is off the rail. Like, this.
How are you going to pull us back to reviews now?
I don't know. Like, how do you get back to video games from this? Like, how do you recover?
Speaking of Farmers Only.
Speaking of dicks.
Oh,
Farmers. Speaking of dicks. Oh, man.
Honestly, you can't go wrong with speaking of dicks. You really can't.
You can't. You can't.
It might get you in trouble at the HR meeting.
There is no HR here.
No. Jacob's just HR.
Yeah. Oh, God. Well, I'm in trouble.
And that or we'll make Aki HR.
Oh, hell no.
There you go.
So anyway, yeah, reviews. Should we get to these? We have a lot to talk about tonight. A lot of games to discuss. Should we dive into these?
Being sure. So close to the end of the year, surprising, but they're out there, and they are going to be talked about.
They are, and don't expect much next week in terms of reviews. We might have a small handful if things come through for you guys.
For the most part,
hoping for you, Purnell. I'm hoping for you.
Oh, let's be real. You're also hoping for you, because that will be a hilarious review. I'm positive.
I need to know what it is now, because I know what I got.
Nope. It's a secret.
Oh no, this is like Christmas. Yeah. It's like reverse right. Christmas.
We might have some SML After Dark next week. We'll see. But for this week, no After Dark this week. But we're going to start things off with Brigandine, The Legend of Runercia, developed by Matrix Software, published by HappyNet, released December 10th on PS4 for $49.99. Players choose one of six countries to assume the role of ruler, aiming to conquer Runercia and command more than 100 rune knights throughout six nations, leading various monster troops of various dragons, ghouls, and fairies into fierce battles on hexagonal grid maps in the tactical turn-based battle system. Chris, tell us about Brigandine.
Oh, man. What could I possibly add to that description? No, I'm just kidding.
I would hope a lot. It's a big game.
It is. It's so big. That really wordy copy is just like, it's such a scratching the surface kind of description of the game. Okay. So Brigandine, this is a follow-up to a bygone PlayStation 1 era game by the same well, the same main title. It was Brigandine, but I forget what the original was called. It's
Legend of Forsena.
Oh, thank you. Hey, no. He knows. It's a game I've never played because it's impossibly expensive. Well, it's like $200-ish now.
Damn.
So, yeah, I couldn't compare it to the original, so don't expect any of that. But I watched a video of it, so this is like a modern retelling of it. And the good thing about it is that the plot is not in any way contingent on having played the other game in the series. It's very neatly sets up like that, you know, you've got six nations, five of which have a special magical piece of armor called a Brigandine. And basically, whomever you choose, you can choose any one of these nations to be your protagonist, as it were. And, you know, each of them comes with a protagonist and several, you know, just a whole cast of characters, really. And your game is basically, the entire game is that you have a limited amount of years. It's, you know, something in the, well, it can be up to, I think, decades, but like, you know, in the normal and hard mode, it's several years, where you basically are going to like try to take over the whole map, kind of Risk style. Should get that out of the way immediately, because the world is represented by a map with different countries. Each country has several fortresses, and the game takes place in turns. So there's three different seasons or something like that. Well, there's a season to two seasons in a year, and in each season, there's three different things that happen. Let's call it that. Your units are basically stationed at the towers. You move them around. That's the first thing you do. The second thing you do is choose if you have units that are in towers that are next to towers that are owned by any one of the other countries and you want to attack them, then you can choose to attack them during the attack phase. And if you do attack them, then you go into an actual battle screen, and that's where you fight like a strategic SRPG style fight with all of your units and all of their units. And then, you know, whomever is the winner is the person who gets to control that fort. And then the whole process starts over again. Now, the way that they kind of are able to tell a story in all this, because basically the entire game is over once that whole map is yours. You know, it's like a big board game in that sense, but it does take a long time because you have to go through all these phases and you're, you know, building up all kinds of things. Too many for me to reasonably list in a short, you know, review like this. That's why I prepared an hour and 40 minutes of text. Jesus. So here we go. Just kidding.
That's what I'm here for.
Yeah, I know. I could go on because the cool thing is, though, if you really want to get into the mechanics of this game more so than what I'm describing, there is a free demo that you can download and it teaches you how to play the game.
Ooh.
And there's a huge, robust tutorial that teaches you every single thing about what you need to know to like get through this game. And yet the freedom of strategy is actually pretty good. You can play this game in all sorts of styles. Like, the good thing to know is at least on the easy difficulty, which is, let's face it, that's all I could play it on. You definitely, like, there's a few years that will pass before the enemies will try to conquer you. Therefore, you can spend a lot of time doing things like, instead of trying to conquer the world, you can build up your units, or you can send them on quests and get more experience and items. All of this happens during that first phase, which is like, you know, the build-up phase, let's call it. I don't remember what it's actually called. But if I had the Switch version, I'd have it on the Switch right in front of me so I could read the menus. But it's on the PS4 in the other room, so. Anyways, so during the build-up phase, like I said, you can go to all of your units and, like, you can summon monsters. So the way that units work is that you have your knights, your rune knights, and they're like leaders of a group. And then to that group, you can add and subtract and move around any kind of like monsters. You can summon monsters. Those cost mana. You get mana by doing battles or quests or whatever. And so like every time you do a battle, then you have a chance to replenish like any monsters that may have been slain. Now, the downside to that is that you kind of can't really, unless you really want to save scum in this game, which you can, it lets you save pretty much any time, and you have lots and lots of save slots. It's unreasonable to get too attached to any of your monster units, because once they die, they die. There's one item that will revive them, but it's rare. So you're going to be doing a lot of, like, kind of, you know, summoning monsters and then trying to get them to level up, or maybe have them join in on a battle and, like, kind of scoot them to the side so they don't get murdered. And because every time you get a new monster unit, it starts over at level one. So that's a kind of a thing. So anyways, yeah, you can choose to send any and all of your units to go do quests, or even just to train and gain experience points just for free. Of course, the downside to that is if they are off doing something else, then that will leave your tower defenseless. But you can still, again, strategize for that, because you can only take over a fort or be taken over if there's a direct line from one fort to the other. So you could, like, find an isolated fort and, like, kind of hole up in there. And, you know, that's again, part of the strategy that you can do. Once you get to the attack phase, you can, if you've built up some units in some forts, you can send, like, two units after, the enemy fort, even choosing, like, a unit or two from a different fort if it's also connected. So you can actually pincer attack the enemy and just really wreck their day, and which is really fun to do. I actually did that. I did a successful pincer attack. By the way, there is an achievement for that.
Nice.
And the enemy just, like, wet their pants and ran away. Sometimes if you overwhelm the tower, like, another tower with your, like, mighty units, then they'll just give up immediately, and then you win. And a good way to know this is that when you pull together all of your rune knights, all your monsters, all your everything, the game is really good about doing this. They actually give you an aggregate score. So, like, your score is like 10,000. But, like, and that's all of your units combined have a measurable amount of power. And, like, the enemy unit might have, like, 5,000. And, yeah, if there's that much of a discrepancy, then you're almost guaranteed to win. However, I was at 15,000, and I went after 11,000, but it had the ruler of the country in there, and he cleaned my clock. Because that's the thing, is that if your main protagonist, who also acts as a rune knight, is in the fight and he loses, then all the units disappear. Anytime you defeat or have defeated, like, a rune knight, that makes all the monsters in their unit disappear from the battlefield. So, you know, even though your monsters are considerably weaker, they actually do serve as a good, like, line of defense. But again, you're dealing with something that won't be revived. Like, the rune knight will be fine. They just have to be out of action for a while. But, you know, you lose your monsters permanently. So it's like all this 4D chess kind of thing going on, like, that you have to consider when you're fighting in this thing. And yet, when you're actually in there in the action, it feels really, like, it's one of those things where it's like this dense outer layer. But once you cut through it, like, the inside is this nice, creamy, just, you know, straight up strategy RPG that anybody who's played, like, a Shining Force, a Fire Emblem, you know, any, pick your favorite. It will feel like that because it's really well done. And, like, it's, you know, it feels familiar. And yet, again, it's got, like, all this complicated stuff around it. But once you kind of, like, learn how to, like, get into the systems and, like, you know, sort of learn how to maneuver that, this becomes, like, one of the more fun strategy RPGs. And again, the fact that, like, your entire quest is just laid before you, like, it's not, like, you know, beat all these countries and then see a cutscene and then go to a different map. It's not like that. It's every time that you do, like, a battle, not every single time, but a lot, very often, it will, like, after the battle before the next phase, it'll, like, do the requisite cutscenes. And sometimes they will organically, like, adjust the story to what you've just done. So, like, I pulled a lot of units over to the east because I was going to take over the country to the east. And that actually appeared in the text in the story. They were like, oh, yeah, he's moved to the east and moved a lot of units to the east. And, like, it's kind of cool, like, the way that it does that. Like, it's just a ton of complexity in this thing. And the different, like, countries are all very, unique and, like, interesting. Like, you've got, one that's all, like, lady warriors. You've got one that's, like, the, the, like, super, like, this is the default army type of situation. You got these guys who don't, the one nation that doesn't have a brigandine, they're like kind of edgy bad guys, and they're like, yeah, we're going to show how cool we are without a brigandine, and you know, they got that stuff going for them. But they also have grandpa puppets, so that's a it's a character who is a puppeteer but also one of your best units. So, and he's a grandpa. Yeah, it's great. And then there's the United Islands of Sexy Pirates. And they've got the Brigandine of Ego, and they're really fun. So, because they're sexy pirates. I mean, what could be more fun than that?
If you got Purnell's attention.
I don't want to know. Damn right.
Exactly. And, you know, if you want to be like a drip, you can play as the like pious church nation, whatever, boo. And, you know, things like that. And yeah, the whole thing is wrapped up in this package where it's like, you know, there's nothing super spectacular that goes on graphically in the game because it's moving around units who look good, around terrains that look good. You know, the sound is, the music is really, you know, epic, and it's apparently the same composer as the original games too. And, but yeah, what I really like is that like the art style of like cutscenes and stuff and characters, like they don't look anime, they don't look realistic, they look just like paintings of characters. I don't know, I think that they're really cool looking. And so it's kind of like wrapped up in this really neat looking package with lots of good writing. So, you know, it's a great time, keeps me coming back.
Well, then overall, $50 on this one. I know it's kind of pricey, but these games usually have price tags like this.
Yeah, this is a fully fledged strategy RPG with six like unique ways to play through it. Oh, I hate using the word unique now. With six different ways to play through
it. Is it a unique experience, Chris?
It's a unique experience. By the way, after the show, I'm going to be doing another one of those. Anyways, yes, it is good, and it is worth $50 because, and also it has a physical version on Switch and PS4 from Limited Run. So, but I think it's like not the limited version of Limited Run; it's just like a full on print. And
I can honestly back you up on that by saying that I reviewed the Switch version for the show, and I still bought a physical copy of the game.
I'm buying the Switch version from a friend who purchased the PS4 version because she prefers PS4. So. I'm going to be buying this too myself. So, yeah.
So worth
it. It's a buy it. It's a bought it.
It's already been bought.
Works for me.
Can you imagine the company listening to these reviews and being like, damn, they must, that, we gave this to a good group. They paid for the game and still did the review for us.
Yeah, exactly.
Didn't need to give them a code at all. Goddamn.
Oh, no, you still had to. But we appreciate it.
Yeah,
I was going to
say, yeah. There's plenty of games I bought that I'm not talking about.
All right. Anyway, next game to talk about is called Twin Mirror, developed by Don't Nod Entertainment, published by Bandai Namco, released December 1st on Xbox One, PS4, and PC for $29.99. Forced to confront his past, Sam Higgs uses his unique...
The word is ruined.
That word is ruined for us now, yeah. Uses his unique intellectual abilities to uncover his hometown's dark secrets, but how do you know who to trust when you're not even sure you can trust yourself? Serlina wrote in a review this one, and Chris, you're going to talk about it as well, but let's see what Serlina has to say first.
Okay.
She says, greetings, SML friends and fam. It's your girl, Serlina, and this week I'm reviewing Twin Mirror for the PS4. Developed by Don't Nod Entertainment and published by Bandai Namco Entertainment America, Twin Mirror is a single-player psychological thriller where you play as Sam, a reporter who's pulled back to the small town he left behind by the tragic death of his best friend, only to find that things are never as they seem. Let's get on to the review. When I first started playing, I was excited because I was getting major Heavy Rain vibes. Well, allow me to kill that thought for you right now. This is not Heavy Rain. And if you go in with those expectations, you will be disappointed. The story isn't all that deep, certainly not deep enough to be classified as a psychological thriller. When you boil it down, it's your classic whodunit, which isn't terrible, but let's call a spade a spade. The characters are all fairly one-dimensional as well, and the gimmick that's used to make Sam not one-dimensional doesn't work all that well. What's the gimmick? Well, Sam has an inner Sam, which is supposed to act as his conscience. The only problem is Sam is thoroughly unlikable, and inner Sam is a bit of a doesn't-know-it-all dick, though I do applaud inner Sam's fashion choices. The most interesting character in the game is Joan, Sam's goddaughter, who knows from the get-go that something is up and is the only character who comes close to being fully fleshed out, which is a shame because the potential is here. Anyway, onto the gameplay. The way the game plays is, as a reporter, Sam is able to find clues about certain things to recreate the scene in his mind palace. Yes, they actually call the space in between Sam's ears a mind palace. As a Sherlock fan, I have no choice but to groan loudly. Sam, you are no bumper dip clubber snatch. That's a new one. I haven't heard bumper dip clubber snatch before.
But you know what she was talking about?
Yes, everyone knows exactly who she was talking about.
I gotta say, though, hearing that, though, I need to look into the term, the concept of a mind palace. I think that might be something that gets used, like, regularly, because I reviewed a game, I'm not sure if it was last year or at the beginning of this year, it was last year, where they did another thing where the guy went to his mind palace to level up and stuff. And that exact same way of referring to it, too.
Yeah, I'm not sure which chicken or egg came first on that one. Like, cause I'm not sure if that's like an actual aphorism that people used prior to Sherlock, but man, Sherlock sure made it like a thing.
I love Sherlock.
Anyway, she continues on. Once you've collected all the clues, you can change the outcomes of the scene until you find the right one or the one you're comfy with. You can also relive memories in your mind palace if you find the right items in the game. Here's the bad part. Selecting items and finding clues is incredibly clunky. The movement in this game needed a bit more work. Plus, there are highly infuriating sequences in the Mind Palace that will make you want to stop playing. I know it's there to build suspense, but the only thing it built was my anger. Also, everything in this game is slow. Sam moves slowly. Even when running, he moves on the slow side. Even the loading is ridiculously slow, and I downloaded the whole game. I mean, you have to download the whole game.
Yes.
Loading,
I downloaded 30% of the game.
And then quit.
Then I just threw my PS4 out the window.
As soon as it said ready to start, she pushed the button. She was like, yeah, good enough.
There's no need for me to be sitting for minutes while things load. I swear if the load times and movement weren't so slow, you'd probably shave an hour off the game. Finally, let's talk about the graphics. For the most part, the graphics are solid, but there are a few things I need to mention. First, the character animations are real weird, with lots of inhuman movements and facial expressions. The real offender for me is Anna, who is Sam's former girlfriend. Anna's black, and that's cool, but why does Anna look so ashy? For those who aren't in the know, an ashy black person is a person who looks like they just took a dust bath. I know the reason she looks like that in the game is because they kept her at a permanent light on her, but it makes her look like a chap-lipped crackhead, and I don't appreciate it at all.
Lots of Dave Chappelle just, like, flooded everyone's mind.
No self-respecting black woman is going to allow herself to be seen without some sort of moisturizer. If you don't know, now you know, so get with it, developers.
That is freaking hysterical.
Oh, man. Twin Mirror is available right now on the PS4 and a couple other platforms for $29.99, and should you buy it, I have to be honest, I can't recommend the game at that price point. The story and experiences are not memorable enough to justify it. If you could catch it on sale, like $20, I'd give it a try. It. Not necessarily a bad game. The premise is there, even with an unlikable protagonist, but the execution was lacking, and I was left disappointed. Chris, what are your thoughts?
I had just opened a window, and then you asked me the question, and so I closed the tab. Because I was looking up a name, because I was going to make a joke. And the joke is that the protagonist of this game is a great value brand, Edward Norton.
Oh, no.
A self-satisfied chuckle.
Hey, I approve.
Okay, so I did not have a bad time with this game. However, Surly brings up lots and lots of solid points here.
So,
the game is slow. It's not action-based. Like, it's not one of those things where it's like you get into a fight and you have quick time events kind of thing. Although, I don't know, maybe there's some of those in there somewhere. Because you make a lot of choices that kind of make your character either, like, kind of wimpy or really, like, confrontational. Like, he doesn't... There's hardly any chill with this guy. He's either, like, folded over completely, like, based on your dialogue choices, or he's just, like, you know, getting in over his head. But yeah, there's like there's lots of interesting things in it, like, you know, because he like blacks out and at one point because he drinks way too much and he takes pills and stuff. So and then when he wakes up, he breaks into the bar where he was last night and like kind of stumbles around it, like trying to piece together what had happened, even though he was the culprit, you know, like he's trying to figure out like what he did and with whom. And you know, that like takes you to one of those Mind Palace scenes and stuff like that. And of course, yeah, there's another like scene. I think what she's talking about where you have to like run away from this big scary man that's chasing you in a dream kind of thing. And you have to run past these like glass doors that are kind of like, it's like a first person or slightly third person over the shoulder version of like the Battletoads tunnel bike sequence, you know.
Jeez.
It's not that, well, that's a fast game, this is a slow game, but it's still one of those things where if you like mess up and run into the door wrong, then you have to start the whole thing over. But if you get it right, then you just end up in a different like tunnel of doors, and you kind of don't know whether you got it right or not, and then you have to like run through the correct door. It's like weird things like that, and it's not particularly fun. This one really is like for the people who want to like see the story and like want to affect it with dialogue choices and stuff like that. In that sense, I say it functions best as a, it's hard to these are stupid words to say, but like a visual movie.
A visual movie
versus a visual novel. This is like more cinematic. So, but you're choosing like an things.
Interactive movie.
Yeah, it's an interactive movie, but I'm like saying because it's like the visual novel format of like storytelling. Oh. It's like a visual movie, right?
Interactive.
I told you it was stupid. I didn't say it was.
You did warn us.
I mean,
I did warn you.
Honesty is best policy, though.
Yeah, exactly. So, like, in that sense, there's some interesting stuff going on with it. Like, again, it's a whodunit. So it's like if you're looking to piece together stuff, if you're like interested in, you know, generic brand Edward Norton's, you know, past life with, I guess, his crackhead wife. It's Early's words, not mine. Which, by the way, I thought she was okay. But anyways, whatever. I did not pick up on the ashiness. That's not something that's in my purview. So. She sings a song at one point and it's kind of lovely, even though the like video game characters trying to play guitar is like the most awkward looking thing in the world. It's like when you see somebody playing a movie in, or a video game in a TV show.
And they're just mashing like, all the buttons randomly.
They're just holding the controller upside down and then you hear like bleeps and bloops, even though it's like a PlayStation 6, you know, things like that.
Pac-Man from the Atari 2600.
That was my next point, actually. So here's the thing, and I'm glad Surly didn't mention this so that I can mention it. So this game was co-produced by Bandai Namco, right? Mm-hmm. So or something. Like, they had a hand in it. And the way that they, like, and this is something that Namco does all the time, but what I love in this game is that there's a fully functional Pac-Man arcade cab that you can play as nice. The character. So you can play Pac-Man over the shoulder of, you know, of great value Edward Norton. And it is the game. It's like, you can just sit there and play it. And it's like, I just think that's so funny. That like you can play a better game inside of this game. And I kind of feel like that's a good summary of the game. I thought it was more interesting than Surly thought, but again, it didn't grab me in any like special way or anything like that. So, no. You know,
it's like my review, I prefer Pac-Man.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, can we get Dragon Spirit, please?
Jesus. Anyways. How does a game have to feel like my review? I like Pac-Man more.
I like that you can play Pac-Man in it. But so no, like $29.99.
Is it worth Pac-Man?
I've paid that much for. No, I paid that much for things with Pac-Man in it that were more fun. Let's call it that. It's an interesting story. It's a cool experiment. I actually like the Mind Palace sequences when you're not running around doors and stuff. You know, like there's some cool things that happen. Is it worth 29? It's, you know, that's going to be up to you. I would put this in the try it category. There's nothing in it that would push it for me to a total buy it. But I don't think that it's a total deny it either. So it's like just hitting straight in the middle.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
All right. Next game to talk about is called Monster Sanctuary, developed by Moirai Games, published by Team 17, released December 8th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $19.99. Also available as part of Xbox Game Pass, the first of a couple of games this week we're going to talk about on Game Pass. Embark on an epic adventure using the powers of the monsters you collect and the team you build to unlock an ever-expanding world. On your quest to become the ultimate monster keeper, you'll unravel the cause of a mystery that threatens the peace between humans and monsters. Brunel, tell us about Monster Sanctuary.
Monster Sanctuary will consume your everything. It will eat your clock up. God damn. Anyway, what about the game itself, though? So, a lot of people, when they first see this, will immediately go, Pokemon ripoff. And to those people, I say, you should look a little deeper in this before you write it off. Because while at the surface, it is another monster battler, its core is actually a lot deeper than most monster battler games go, I think. So, the idea is that you are a person who comes from a line, one of four, I guess let's call them regal families in your Monster Sanctuary community, which means you get a spectral animal that goes from, gets passed down from generation to generation. And you are using this spectral monster to guide you on your quest to become an ultimate monster tamer or whatever. So the way this works is you are exploring the world using monsters, and you are looking, well, in addition to unraveling the mystery that Joe mentioned, you're also seeking out and defeating monster guardians, which are like souped up super versions of monsters in the game. And when you defeat them, for every certain number of them that you can beat, you get to kind of rank up your character and become that much closer to being a master, which actually unlocks a few things, which I'll get into in a few. But I should probably talk about the actual combat in the game before going into other features. So, in this game, monster combat is broken up into battles of 3v3 battles. You get 3 monsters, and they get 3 monsters. So technically, you can have up to 6 at your disposal, but when you start a battle, you have to choose 3 to bring in with you, and you can kind of swap them in and out. Kind of like, Pokemon Balls. But once you get past that, and elemental weaknesses and strengths, I think the similarities kind of start to fall off, because this game gets really deep with how you customize your monsters. So I'll start with the actual way battle works before I go into the customization part. Every monster has a variety of different attacks that fall under the elements of wind, earth, water, fire, and I'm probably forgetting something, but I don't care. Let's just say neutral. And then there's also physical and magical damage typings. When you go into battle, every monster has a variety of strengths and weaknesses that come along with them to the things I just mentioned. And every monster has a variety of attacks that are attributed to them. So at its base, you want to hit weaknesses and block weaknesses or block attacks with a strength. But every attack can hit a certain number of times. Every heal can be used a certain number of times per use. So say, for example, healing. It doesn't just say, heals for 50% damage or heals for 50 HP like in normal games. In this game, it will say heals 4 times 125% of your magic. The reason behind that is because there's a thing that buffs your attacks, and that is called the combo meter. So if you have an attack that does 4 strikes, that will add 4 to your combo. After that, you can choose one of your other 2 monsters to do an attack. And for every number in that combo, that will increase the amount of damage the next monster will do. So one of the strategies the game will build up for the player is to, if you have like weaker monsters who aren't really fit for attacking, you might have them use attacks that do lots of hits. So that even though they don't particularly do a lot of damage to the opponent, they will build the combo meter so that the final attacker does that much more damage. In addition to that, a lot of attacks, most of the attacks, have sub-attack elements, too. Like, you might do an attack that will apply armor break to the opponent, or you might get an attack that says, you know, attributes a bonus buff if you pull it off. So you'll be mixing and matching a lot of moves based on their sub-abilities, their actual elements, the number of times they hit, whether they're magical or physical, and then some. But then after that, you know, of course, the enemy will do its thing, and then you go back and forth until you're done. And then at the end of a battle, you will get evaluated by how and how well you did. They rate you on things like how many turns the battle took, how much damage you took compared to how much you healed back, how many buffs and debuffs were applied in the battle. And it's pretty much a lot of it, but it also ends up boiling down to just like win battles quickly, and don't take a lot of damage. And if you pull this off, you'll get a decent rating between 1 to 5 stars. The more stars you get, the more likely you are to get rare items in combat. And this is also how you get new monsters, because in this game, the way you get them is by winning monster eggs in combat and then hatching them to get new monsters. No, you don't have to ride your bike around in circles for 2 hours to do that. You just select the egg and then use it. Boom, you're done. But here's where it gets obsessive and deep. So in Pokemon, customization of a Pokemon is mostly done before you start really fighting with them. And what I mean by that is, like, in Pokemon, you get, you know, IVs and EVs, and you learn moves when you level up, and you can equip, like, one item to them. In this game, however, you can equip 3 accessories, 1 weapon, which makes no sense, by the way, that a slime can fight with a Cestus or a Morningstar, but I digress. 3 accessories, 1 weapon, and then every time you level up, you get a skill point. You don't just randomly get moves based on a pre-selected tier. Instead, in this game, there is an extensive skill tree for every monster in the game. And what I mean by that is, say, for example, I'm going to name a random monster. Now, who am I kidding? I'm going to name the slime, because he's actually on my screen right now. The slime starts with like 4 different attacks. Arcane Bolt, Heal, Slime Shot, and Acid Rain. Okay. Now, each of the attacks I just named has its own skill tree associated with it. So, Arcane Bolt breaks into 4 different things, one being an advanced version of Arcane Bolt, and then 3 like abilities, like such as for every time, you know, an attack hits, if it crits, it does an additional 25% damage, or for every time you heal, one random guy in your party will get an additional heal or a buff, stuff like that. So, you take each attack, acknowledge that each one has about 4 things that get tiered down to it, and then multiply that, because for every 10 levels, you get access to an extended skill tree for each of those trees, and it just goes down. You do not have enough skill points to get all these things, which means you got a spec. So you're going to be sitting there like, okay, I have this cool monster who has these attacks, but which attacks are the least useful for him so that I can apply his skill points to other buffs on other trees? And then you're just going down this rabbit hole of ultra customization. And then you can evolve the monster to get new skills. And you can upgrade the attack, the gear to get, like, you know, buffs based on like blacksmithing. Most of the damn game will just come from freaking min-maxing your monsters. It's sick.
But so aside from that, you sound addicted to this one.
There's a bit of addiction, because I started out feeling like, okay, this game is kind of slow. And I'll admit, me and my ADHD self, it still is a little slow. Because, I mean, that's one thing that Pokemon does get, is that due to having not having so such obsessions with the, you know, customization of the monsters, it's snappy. But with this game, you will be taking your time, because you're going to want to figure out what to do with your monsters. That doesn't make it bad, though. Quite the contrary. If you can get into that, you've got a lot to do here. And I didn't even get into the fact that there are different battle types, like monster battles, where it's kind of similar to Pokemon in that you get to use your full roster of 6 monsters. You start with 3, and then as you lose one, you'll swap it out. But due to how battles work in this game, battles are a lot tougher than they would be in a Pokemon game, because again, you're trying to sync up who's going to attack first, second, and third to get the combo maxed out. You're playing with lots of buffs and debuffs, and since a lot of attacks come with buffs and debuffs, but they play a major role in the game. Like, they're not just like extra things you can do. they will be a major part of every battle you fight. But then beyond the battles, you also have the actual exploration element, because you're running around like a, I hate saying it, I'm not going to say it because fuck that. You run around a map, an adventure map, a sort of Castlevania-esque map. And I'm stopping there. you run around a map, and there's like a variety of different like chests you can find, and that's where the monsters are. You explore, but the way you get around is by finding the occasional equipment that lets you do like new abilities, like a double jump and stuff. And also, each monster can do a variety of different things. Like you might find a monster that can ignite torches, one that lets you kind of levitate shortly, one that can break down walls, you know, one that lets you swim underwater. And this kind of thing, you'll be like using specific monsters in your team to do different things in the map itself. So while the exploration never really gets particularly complicated, I'll say, it still remains fun. Like, you generally just enjoy running around knowing I got to get this monster, I can hover across this ledge to get to that cool chest. But once you're done that and it's time to get back to the nitty-gritty brawl town, you're going to sit at that table with your pen and paper, and you're going to write down the optimal skill tree for your cool monster team. It's insanely deep. You can spend hours just customizing monsters in this thing, and I am not exaggerating at all. It's deep.
Because I'm guessing you have spent hours customizing them?
Oh, God, no. You're talking to the wrong guy. I hoard skill points. Remember that. So instead, what I do is have a bunch of neutered monsters who could potentially be awesome, but I don't spend the skill points until I get my ass beat so much that I have to, which in this game happened multiple times because, again, if I'm not winning battles quickly enough, I'm getting low ratings on the battles, which means I'm getting new monsters. And, of course, I'm just dying, too.
So. You're a hoarder, Purnell.
I can't help it.
How's that laptop of yours?
Oh, it's open in my mind.
Oh, I was going to say.
In your mind palace.
In my mind palace, yeah. It's like I should open my laptop, and instead I constructed a bench and then caulked the side of my house. And I'm not even making that up. I literally caulked my house instead of opening up a laptop. So I don't know when I'm going to get to this thing, but. Yeah, I know. It's not fun to caulk the house. But
oh, my God.
What are you doing with your life for now?
Preventing water from leaking indoors.
All right. So anyway, $20 on Monster Sanctuary. What do you think?
So long as you're a person who's okay with being a little patient and customizing your monster loadout and such, I think it's a genuine buy. It's a good game.
Cool.
I sure added it to my wish list.
Boom.
There you go. You sold a copy, Purnell.
That's what I like to do. He's like, no, actually, you sold a wish. I'm dreaming of it.
I'm waiting on a paycheck to clear.
That's a future buy.
There you go. All right. Next game is called Call of the Sea, developed by Out of the Blue, published by Raw Fury, released December 8th on Xbox One, Series X and S, and PC for $19.99, also available as part of Xbox Game Pass. It is 1934 in the far reaches of the South Pacific. Nora has crossed the ocean following her trial of her missing husband's expedition and finds herself on a lush island paradise, a nameless forgotten place dotted with the remnants of a lost civilization. What strange secrets does it hold, and what might Nora unearth in her quest for the truth? Cole, tell us about Call of the Sea.
I can't answer those questions because they're spoilers.
Okay, then don't answer the questions. Just tell us how the game is.
I just wanted to go ahead and get that out there. Because sometimes you'll ask me after you say the summary, and you're like, Cole, did you do it? I'm like, I can't tell you that. Spoiler. So this time I'm just warning you ahead of time. I ain't telling you shit. It's spoilers. Call of the Sea is absolutely gorgeous. You're playing as Nora. It's a first-person adventure game with a very heavy emphasis on puzzle solving. And also, it's pretty much a glorified collectathon. There are collectibles literally everywhere. In a lot of instances, I would bitch about that and be like, there's too much shit you can miss. But thankfully, Call of the Sea devs, they went above and beyond and they gave us chapter select. So if you miss shit, you don't have to play the whole game again. I'm a big fan of chapter select. I will always applaud an opportunity or, you know, take the opportunity to applaud Chapter Select when it is included. So here we are. Thank you very much for that shit. like I said, first person adventure game, absolutely beautiful. The puzzles are not necessarily difficult or overwhelming in any kind of way that you can't figure them out. But some of them, especially in later levels, they can take a little snooping around. It's easy to miss the clues that will tell you how to solve the puzzles in an area if you're not just like going around on that collectathon and just touching everything you come across. Then you very much find yourself stuck. I've heard a lot of people complaining about getting stuck. I haven't had any problems with it, but also I wasn't afraid to use a guide. So if you use a guide, you're going to knock the game out in a couple hours. And that's all well and good. But I would definitely recommend at least trying to approach it on your own at first, because this is one of those games that the Call of the Sea is one of those games that when people who don't play indie games regularly like us would find approachable and be able to play. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's one of those that would draw in somebody who would normally be like, oh, I don't play indies, I only play COD. Which,
it's a shame that there's people out there who won't give indies a shot.
It is.
They're
indies. And I actually saw a post on Twitter the other day, now that I'm talking about it like that, where somebody said, oh, I think it was my daughter or somebody who had played Call of the Sea, and now they're like looking for more games like that. And I was like, oh, you have opened a treasure trove. You don't know. So I can appreciate what the game is bringing when it is accessible enough that even people who don't normally play these kind of games can get into it. I think that's a huge plus for it. I think the fact that the puzzles are challenging enough that even if you're hardcore into puzzle games, you're not going to find them too easy, but they're also approachable enough that somebody who doesn't play this shit regularly can be like, yeah, I figured it out eventually, you know? If you're running through it, if you're using a guide, like I said, a couple hours, but if you're actually playing it properly, it could take you a good 4 or 5 hours to roll through the game. Which I think is more than fair for it. It never really. Dude, are you done? He's making his bed. It never really overstays its welcome or anything. I definitely appreciate it for being a game that doesn't try to like pad its length. It would be really easy to. You see a lot of puzzle games like this that will do that too, and it annoys the shit out of me. don't try to overstay your welcome. And Call of the Sea does not by any means. It has a really good pacing. The voice acting is really good. I did have a couple of instances of frame rate dropping. I'm on a 1S. It happens. I can't even like hold it against the game at this point. It's my console. I got annoyed enough with it that I did start playing it on PC. I was like, I don't have time for this. I have to review it. I need to get through it. So I did get annoyed, but you can stack it for achievements if you want to play it on both anyway, and I would recommend you do that. I did get tickled when I played it on my PC, because before I had a chance to go into the settings and like adjust it to not be super mega ultimate everything, it was my computer was telling me that I was getting 450 frames a second.
Jesus.
And I was like, my monitor is just probably sitting here going, what is she trying to do? We can't do this. but it is stunning and beautiful, regardless of which platform you play it on. It's really a beautiful game. I found myself a lot of times just kind of stopping and taking screenshots and being like, I'm going to use that for a wallpaper later. And I'll forget and never set it as a wallpaper. But I took them all, and they're all very pretty, so I have no complaints either way. Yeah, it's not not an overwhelmingly in-depth game to like deep dive into. It kind of just is what it is. It's a short narrative experience with some puzzles that are well fleshed out and very well paced.
Well, then $20 on it. What do you say?
I'm going to give it an easy buy it. I really had a great time with it. And also, it's on Game Pass, so even if you don't want to buy it, you have nothing to lose if you just try it out.
Yeah, Game Pass.
Yeah, stack it, get the two completions, and have a nice day.
And achievement hunters. Oh, man.
Well, just you wait.
I can't wait. Next up is Tanuki Justice, developed by Wonder Boy Bobby, published by No Gravity Games, released December 10th on the Switch for $14.99. Inconspicuous combination of a platformer bullet hell with cute pixel graphics, Tanuki Justice will challenge your precision jumping and shuriken throwing skills. Pernell, tell us about Tanuki Justice.
For the last video, this will be short because it's a lot to say about Tanuki Justice. It is a nice Genesis-style throwback, both in graphic design and also gameplay. Probably based on the fact that it's that, by, like you mentioned, Wonder Boy, whatever it's called, because the character sprites in this game 100% remind me of like a Wonder Boy game. And that's a great thing, which is what drew me to it in the first place. Gameplay consists of you being a Tanuki warrior, so to speak. And you are playing through 6+ stages of side-scrolling combat. Controls are very straightforward. You're generally going from left to right, but sometimes you'll be going vertically as well. And you have a few options in gameplay. You can press one button to jump, and then again to double jump. You have a normal attack, which allows you to throw shuriken. You don't get to hold the button now. You got to mash it a la Metal Slug, but that's okay, because if this game lets you hold it down, that would be too easy for that, to be honest with you. So you have to hit the button constantly to do attacks. As you attack enemies and collect certain items on the board, you'll fill up a certain, like a special power gauge. And when you max it out, you can press another button on the controller to throw a ginormous shuriken that does a lot of damage to enemies. That's pretty much your super attack in the game. And those are the only things he can do, which is honestly okay, because the meat of the game is the actual obstacle navigation, because as you're running through these stages, you are getting waylaid by a variety of different enemies, many of which throw projectiles. The bullet hell element per se primarily comes up in higher difficulties, but if you play on normal, you can honestly get through the game. It's still challenging for the most part, but due to like unlimited continues and such, you can ultimately get through the game with a modicum of skill. It's the later difficulties that will really test you on this. As you fly through levels, you're pretty much dodging enemies and obstacles, and every level, I'll admit, has a decent, unique concept for like obstacles per se. Like my favorite level in the game was the graveyard stage, because whereas other levels were primarily, you know, like it was everything you could pretty much kill aside from like a few boulders on one level. The graveyard stage had a lot of obstacles that you could not attack, and you had to specifically dodge and avoid, primarily of the spectral variety. But it also disappearing blocks, because fuck disappearing blocks. But also all these levels are timed as well. So like there's no dawdling. You have to get through before the time limit runs out. So they intend for this game to be a snappy experience. Get to the end, beat the boss. Ta-da. Though every level also generally has at least one part where they stop the progression and you get waylaid by like a sort of like enemy horde. So like enemies will come in from the left, the right. Sometimes they'll just appear out of the scum from the background, what have you. And you just have to defeat them all before you're free to move on. Though the game itself doesn't have a lot to go with it as far as like complexity and all, I think that's the charm of this game too. You come into this expecting like a pretty much like an arcade experience, like an arcade game experience, and you're going to get it. And I think it works well for it. The soundtrack is fantastic. The challenge is there when you get to the higher difficulties. Score running is a little bit of a weird bit, though, because if you pause the game, it invalidates your score. I don't know why that is a thing, because quite frankly, I don't know what a person would do with a paused game that would somehow make them play better. I guess some people might pause the game to see what the bullet pattern is that's coming and then unpause it, but I think that's a bit much. But if you don't care about, you know, score challenging, or quite frankly, you're okay with it, and the fact that you can't take a piss without turning the game off intrigues you, thing, you're going to really be in for a treat with this bad boy. But in general, I think it's fun. I like the fact you can unlock an extra character in the game, too, which I won't go into detail on it. But you can unlock another character, and that kind of becomes its own little mode when you pull it off. But for the most part, the game is fairly straightforward. You can get to the game in about an hour or so. And but again, that's okay because it's designed to be that way, and I think the price reflects it too. You can play from all the different difficulties as well, so you can get your meat and potatoes in that way. But in the end, I am not disappointed with Tanuki Justice. I kind of got what I was expecting coming into it. I wouldn't have minded more power ups and such because really the only things you can collect from item boxes are items that will boost your special meter gauge. Item that will make your shuriken a little stronger and actually give it a little bit more reach as well, because your shuriken doesn't go across the entire screen. It stops. And one-ups, and then a shield that lets you take one hit. Those are all the items you can pick up in the game. But again, it does its job, and it's enjoyable, and I liked it.
Cool. So overall, $15?
Get you some justice.
Maybe I will.
Also, if I remember correctly, for those who might have heard what I just said and thought that $15 is a bit much, I actually saw an advertisement on the eShop. I think it's 40% off right now.
It might be if you own a game by No Gravity Games, I believe you get a discount.
Which I think we all do.
Yeah, the No Gravity has a lot of games out and a lot worth picking up. So if you own a game from No Gravity, you have a discount waiting for you.
Get on it. Get that justice.
Coolie cool. All right, next up is Killer Chambers, developed and published by Village Bench. It released December 12th on Xbox One for $8.99, will be out December 21st on the Switch for $9.99, available now in the EU on the Switch for $9.19. Killer Chambers is an action platformer memory game hybrid. You must survive in small rooms filled with traps until one turn of the hourglass. Beware, even if you're hit only once, you die. Can you hold out against an unforgiving bullet hell in a narrow space? Chris, you love bullet hells. What'd you think of Killer Chambers?
This isn't a bullet hell. It's not I don't know. Maybe, like, there's some later stages that resemble one. But, yeah, good luck getting to them. Okay, so what Killer Chambers is, for one, in Googling Killer Chambers so I could look it up when you offered it to me, this isn't named after Robert Chambers, who is a killer, also called the Preppy Killer, the guy who killed a lady in the 60s. So this isn't about him.
Oh, God.
Just letting y'all know. They made a movie about him. I don't know why. So this is a game where a dude is, he's called like Brave Lord or something, or Lord Brave or whatever. He is summoned to the king's castle, but to get there, he must go through all of these rooms set up by a vengeful ghost who has set up all these traps and stuff. And it's very 8-bit style, and the dialogues that happen between each stage are comical. So it's, you know, it's a funny enough game. He's got a top hat on. That actually ends up being more important than not. So what happens is that every time you go to a stage, you have three different things that you can do. You can beat it at three different difficulties. And the first difficulty will get you a key that will allow you to access the next level. If you happen to be able to beat that and you can go into the next stage, then you get an amount of gold. That gold can be exchanged for temporary items that will make the thing easier. But of course, they're consumable, so you know you have to use them sparingly. And those coins are very hard to get because you have to play a much harder version of that stage. The third is that blue currency. I guess it's gems. With those, you can actually purchase hats, which to change your top hat out for. And those are permanent items that give you a lasting enhancement as long as they stay on. That is to say, if one of the many things that are flying at you hits your hat, then it can knock it off, and that will actually knock off your special power until you get killed. And killed you will. This is,
yeah, you're gonna die a lot in this fucking game.
You're gonna die a lot, and there's mechanics involved in that too. So basically, yeah, it you get into a room and it starts just throwing, launching like everything at you. And it's always in the same pattern. That's very important to know, because the next time you get killed, it won't be by surprise. You basically have to memorize each stage to get through them. And so it just becomes this kind of like a Simon Says almost. And if you get killed, you have to start the entire stage over, and it's timer based. So that means that each stage is going to last a certain amount of time. So there's no way to get through it any faster. You just have to survive. And but, you know, in that way, you know, you can, if you're pretty good at short term memory, you can absolutely get through these things. And like I said, the other two difficulties of the rooms are so much more difficult that it just becomes another level. It's just with the same layout. Now, here's the interesting thing about it is that there's a death counter, which, you know, indie games that are like this typically do. And I like that the death counter has, what, 8 digits to it? So it, like, it will count up to a million or more than a million deaths. But a few levels in, it introduces the void, where if you keep dying, it's going to raise this little purple bar. And when that bar gets all the way full, then you have to, in order to progress, even to go back to what you were doing, you have to get through this like Eldritch Horror type of room that is also challenging. So it sends you to a different kind of dungeon that you have to beat so you can continue the actual game.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so you get punished for dying too much eventually. And it does persistently keep track of how many times you died in that room. So, you know, even if you win, it doesn't reset the counter. So interesting stuff. This game really, really layers on the punishment. And in that, it has some value, because some people appreciate like basically challenges that you can get through if you memorize them. I mean, otherwise why would anybody have played any of the Rareware games throughout the years, such as Battletoads, actually, even Donkey Kong Country. It's like some challenges can be overcome just by knowing what's coming, and in that sense people, you know, tend to like that. Past that, I mean, it moves fine. It looks 8-bit. It sounds 8-bit. It does have a sufficient amount of levels, but again, if your skill level is absolutely, it's absolutely going to be up to you and how many hours you're willing to spend on each stage, and thousands of deaths to like see those stages. So that's what it is.
So overall, $10 on this. What do you think?
This is a polarizing game. So for the people who really like the just absolute frustration, you know, requires every bit of your attention to, like, you know, memorize the stage or just be super good at reading the room in an instant and, like, you know, be able to slog through this thing, it's a buy it, because it provides that challenge and then some. Like, you'll be surprised how hard this game is. For everyone else, it is a look at it, and if, you know, if it looks good, then try it. Other than that, for the average gamer, I can't recommend it, because it's just going to frustrate you that you can't get past the first two levels.
Yeah.
It's impenetrable. It really is.
I can agree with that. It's definitely a hard to approach game. If it is a style that connects with you, I like the comparisons to Bullet Hell, honestly, because it comes down to a lot of memorization.
True, but Bullet Hells are like more like a dance, I feel like. This is more like I don't know, a kata. It's like, can you memorize these useless steps and keep them in your head long enough to do them? Anyway, I'm a Bullet Hell fan, and I'm not a fan of this, so that's your you're right in the sense that you interpret it that way.
All right, well, next game to talk about is called Warsaw. We're taking another look at this one, developed by Pixelated Milk, published by Crunching Koalas. Warsaw is a challenging turn-based tactical RPG set in the ruins of a besieged city during the closing months of World War II. Lead your ragtag team of insurgents through the historic streets of the occupied Polish capital to witness firsthand the desperate fight for freedom. Purnell, tell us again about Warsaw.
Well, I just think it's funny that I didn't realize the first time I talked about this game, but you mentioned Pixelated Milk and then like Crunching Koalas. I'm just like, crunchy pixelated milk. koalas. It just, it all went together.
Koala cereal, yes.
There it is. Mm. I would eat the shit out of it, especially if it was like designed after those like koala cookies. Ooh, yeah.
Osseos.
Osseos sold, but Warsaw is a game. I guess it's kind of funny that this is following Killer Chambers because it kind of goes along in that vein too, where it's a good game, but it is for a special audience because Warsaw is a difficult as balls game. I want to compare it to Darkest Dungeon, but that may only be because of how the battle system is set up and also by the graphic design. But in addition to that, in general, well, you'll hear the difficulty in a second, but the idea behind this game is that, as Joe said, you are basically the resistance trying to fight back during the occupation of Warsaw, Germany. And the idea that you are a bunch of ragtag civilians. So you're not military soldiers. You're not professionally trained. You are literally people who took up arms to defend your hometown. And this is being done by way of a resistance movement where you are trying to coordinate efforts to take back sectors of Warsaw. So every period, like basically it goes in a period of days, like 44 days is the, I believe, is the total amount of days. You will probably never see day 44 because you will die.
That's grim.
Well, I mean, the thing about it is like, it makes sense, I guess, because, I mean, it didn't go well for them then either.
Exactly.
So I think that I deep down have to believe that they had to have intended that in some way. Like if you get far, then that's just like a challenge you can take on for yourself. But ultimately, yeah, this is if you're playing a game, imagine you have to actually live this history lesson, bitches. So what it is, every day in game, you have to choose a mission, usually within one of the districts of Warsaw. And every district has its own like morale meter and like regard and also like potential rewards, like if you can help, you know, push back help the resistance push back a little. So like maybe some more supplies or whatever. So you have to choose a location to go to, and then you have to choose your soldiers or civilians to go out with you. You place them in a battle formation, two rows, four columns. And depending on where you place them and the attacks they have equipped determines what they can do per turn. Like you might have an attack that allows you to fire a bullet that does like triple damage, but you can only hit guys three spaces away from you. So if you're at the front of the row, you'll not hit anyone most likely. Or question, you'll only be at the guys in the back row on the other side because you only, once you go three spaces out, you're like, boom, I'm at the back row. But math, actually, you get two spaces. But anyway, I digress. So you have to pretty much be smart about where you place your units and also the attacks you give them. The attacks are based around two things. One, the character itself. They come with their own base skills. You can learn skills through use of spending experience points earned in battle, and also the equipment you give them. Because when you give, based on the weapon they have, different weapons come with different abilities, like a different attacks, like usually two attacks. And so you might find a bazooka that's really cool, but the previous bazooka had better attacks, so you'll end up choosing that because you just don't want to say goodbye to that cool setup that you had going. Anyway, so when you go to a specific district, the game goes into a top-down map. You have a certain amount of stamina. Every step you take will drain that stamina. You have to accomplish your mission before you run out of stamina, or you fail flat out. So you got to be smart about every step you take as you navigate the map. You can't see everything that's at your disposal, so there's like a sort of fog of war in play. But you can alleviate that sometimes if you have access to things like flares or whatever. As you're moving around, if you come across an event such as like enemies that attack you or a barricade that makes you go around, it'll pop up and then you have to navigate it. If a battle occurs, you'll get into combat with enemies. And fun fact, you're almost always outgunned and outnumbered. Literally, not even making that up, which means you got to be really smart about how you approach enemies. And to be perfectly frank, the less fighting you do, the better. It's very rare in games to hear a person say that as being the actual optimal play, but in this game, it cannot be expressed enough. If you can avoid combat, you should do that because you don't want to deal with the repercussions of it. Because even when you lose a battle, when it's a pat, or even when you win a battle, if you take damage, that can build up over time. And if you get to the end of the mission, your characters will still have damage that goes back to the base with them. And the only way you can recover that damage is by not taking them on a future mission. If you don't have enough people to go on a mission without them, then you can rest and just skip a day. But every day you skip makes it bad for the districts themselves. Like, morale will go down. Enemy occupation will increase. So every decision you make ultimately will result in something big happening. There's a major thing associated with every decision you choose. If people die, if you lose a person in combat, they stay dead for good, and you can mourn them in the morgue. You really can mourn them in the morgue. There's an actual character specifically tailored towards that. When you're back at the base, you can spend, I guess, supplies. They just call them, it's like a generic item. It's pretty much the currency. You can decide to swap for new weapons if you come across them. Correction. You can't buy weapons. But what you can do is if you came across like damaged equipment out in the field, you can pay to get it repaired using supplies. Or you can swap the scrap supplies for various like items that can be used or that will be needed. So, for example, the attacks that I mentioned earlier, you don't just use them like you would in a normal game. In this game, ammo is applied to those things. So you might have a rifle attack, but whenever you use that rifle attack, it might require you to use 5 long shot bullets. If you have 200 long shot bullets, do the math for how many times you can do that attack. If you run out of bullets, no attack that requires that ammo type can be used. So resource conservation, baby. Mm-hmm. So it's literally designed to have every decision you make matter. Every choice you make matters. And if you fail, it weighs on you. So I almost feel like Darkest Dungeon might be lighter than this. but with it's that
such a
said,
happy, cheery game, so I can understand.
Yeah, like
now it's gonna be second Darkest Dungeon.
I usually play these downer games. I'm surprised I didn't do this one.
The thing about it, though, I mean, like the thing I messaged, like, I mean, one of my favorite characters that I had in my runs was a kid named Frunk, a little boy who throws like freaking Molotov cocktails. This guy's got to be like 10 years old. He's like lobbing Molotovs and getting shot at and attacked by like freaking angry dogs. It's crazy. But with all that said, the game is not bad at all. It's a rare breed of game, though, in that you don't play this game to relax and you don't play this game to feel good. You play this game to literally take hard decisions and try to persevere as best you can in an environment that is designed to fuck you over sideways. You have to play to the best of your ability. And for every day you scrap out for these people, you feel good. You feel a little better. Like, we're pushing back. And it's like a goal to say, how far into this can I make it? Can I get these guys a day 44? I couldn't, but you might. Because I was not doing it. But I also just kind of like how the experience system works in this game. How you can, as you get experience points, you can say, hey, this cool ability that this character has would be nice to have. It costs 2,800 experience. I'm going to save up. Hopefully I don't die before then and I can buy it. And you also earn accommodations based on how well you do on certain days that are worth a certain number of experience. You might just go to a character and say, I'm just going to dump these accolades on this person so I can just get more experience quickly and hopefully get the skill I want for them, which will make them more valuable in combat. So in the end, as long as you're okay with the stuff I described, as far as like, you know, that challenge element and the fact that you're not going to come here and smile, though I'll admit there are some smiles to be had when that kid with the Molotov cocktail lobs one at the last minute to take out a group of guys that were about to waylay on the freaking poor medic who's about to die. That's a victory, I think. Even if it's a temporary one, it's still a victory. So
that's a smile on my face.
That's blood on that kid's hands for the rest of his life. That you think is a happy moment.
It is a happy moment. He's fighting to liberate his hometown. Shoot.
From Nazis.
It's blood, but it's Nazi blood. True. Screw those bastards.
True. Very true. Fuck Nazis. I think we can all agree on that.
Here to that.
$20 on Warsaw. You said it's a lot of hard decisions. So what's the decision on this one?
I'd say if you're a person who can tolerate hard decisions, then it is a buy it. Otherwise, keep the fuck away.
Sounds good. All right. Next game up is Autumn's Journey, developed by Apple Cider, published by Rattlake Games, released December 8th on PS4, 9th on Xbox, 11th on Switch for $4.99. Aurelie, an aspiring knight from the farming town of Berry, stumbles upon something unexpected during one of her patrols. After a rather inelegant introduction, Kerr states that he's really an earth dragon. Whether he likes it or not, Aurelie is now involved in his mission to regain his dragon form. Along with some help by a fellow dragonkind named Ilmari, their journey begins. Chris and Cole, both of you played this one. Who wants to start?
Don't speak at once. No, Chris is going to start because... Okay. I played this on Xbox, and I'm just going to be like, it's a visual novel. So,
well, I played this on PS4, and it's a visual novel.
Look at you out here stealing my lines. Typical man.
Okay, so, yes, Autumn's Journey. This is, yeah, it's a rather like a visual novel, so it's... There's going to be some things in here that are definitely going to be recognizable. So, the story is basically about a girl who wants to be a knight, and she, befriends is, I guess, eventually befriends, like, two different dragons who have become humans for different reasons that are, you know, revealed in the story. And you basically, you basically go through and make decisions, and it pretty quickly becomes apparent that, like, the decisions that she makes are kind of favoring one of the dudes over the other, because they are dragons, but in the game, you know, since they have human forms, they're just humans with weird ears that look like, you know, dragon ears. And anyways, you know, you're kind of like basically tilting an invisible scale towards one or the other character so that you get to one of a couple of different kinds of endings where, you know, your preferences become known. There is a little bit of an adventure story to it. It's not very long, definitely less than like 2 hours total, I'd say. And it does have the thing where if you go through and you want to make other decisions, you can speed through right to the like decides and then either have it stop speeding up at that point. It's like you can have it do the thing where it's like skip all the stuff you've read already so that you can get through all the content if you want. And if you want to get the easy achievements, then you want to do that because there's three different achievements that require different sets of decisions. And one of them has you really getting friendly with one of the characters, really getting friendly with the other character. And then there's the middle path, which is, you know, no, you don't get particularly friendly with anybody, and everybody just ends up good friends.
Friend zone.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And me, myself, I just went straight for that middle thing. Actually, kind of accidentally, but I was like, well, I don't want to tilt it to any, like, buddy's favor. Maybe it'll just come down to one decision. No, there's a middle decision. Yeah, so, like, basically, the art is interesting. It's not just... Well, it is just characters standing on one side of the screen from each other against backgrounds, you know, that type of visual
novel. They do occasionally move to the middle.
Exactly. Like, sometimes the game will, like, you know, will move them around the screen a little bit, but it's still, like, kind of a static image. It's just, like, being stretched in weird in ways and stuff to kind of give it the illusion of animation, if that makes any sense. And it's usually done to play up the comedy. Plus, it's kind of cool. Like, you know, even though the art style is like the other visual novels, sometimes there'll be like a picture in picture that shows like a really goofy anime like type of scene. Like, you know, just it does gags in picture, which I like. And they all show up in a gallery you can look at later. Not a whole lot of content, but it's a $5 VN. So I'm not going to docket points for that. Yeah, it's pretty interesting. It does have a dyslexic mode, which is good. Mm-hmm. So not a whole lot of other options, though, apart from what I just stated, like gallery, a couple of accessibility options, and of course, ways to get through the story on subsequent read-throughs very quickly.
Cole, any thoughts?
Well, Chris talked about the dyslexic stuff, so I can't talk about that now.
Oops, sorry.
I was gonna.
Hey, you told him like, to go first.
Yeah, I know I did.
You can fuck right off with your.
What do you think of the partial? What do you think of the partial voice acting?
I turned it off. Yeah. I was like, I don't. When it comes to the visual novels, anytime it's like, oh, there's voice acting, I'm like, this is basically going to be like the occasional, and that's what they consider voice acting, and I ain't got time for it.
The characters in this novel have catchphrases.
Yeah, and it gets very repetitive, though.
Yeah, you're not going to, I think the girl, like, it's always saying, I'm going to be a knight.
Yeah, it's just like, okay. Yeah, I'm going to turn that off now. At least they give you the option to do that. I will say, it looks nice environment-wise. The dragon design was pretty cool. But it's typical anime. I fucking hate anime chins. It's maybe not as sharp an anime chin as some of the others we've seen, but God damn it, that's not how an anime works. That's my beef. Otherwise, it looks fine. It's just short to the point. It's got three potential options. You can save scum. I kind of laughed at, like, there's like 20 different save slots, and I'm like, you only have three endings. So I don't know what the fuck the point of that was.
They do that for a lot of those.
Yeah, I was just like, that's a little overkill, but okay.
Maybe if you want to save from a scene that you really liked.
So you can go back and watch them roll in the grass again.
Sure.
And again. All right, Aki.
I'm not here to judge.
I am.
This is yes, so not to our taste, though.
You are here to judge. So for $5, what do the two of you think of Autumn's Journey?
I think it's not. If you're not into the visual novels or running through them for the achievement's sake, then you're already like, there's nothing here for you, right? And that's
it's fine. Not going to win over any new fans.
It sits very squarely where it is, but it does it well. It's not the worst story we've ever come across in these Radalekas.
Definitely, like, even though it talks about dragons, and because it's a VN, there's supposed to be a romance, like, aspect to it. Don't play it expecting to see a lot of dragons or romance.
Yeah, you're not gonna get a whole lot of one.
You get like a image of each dragon.
Yeah. At one point. I feel like it kind of was like, maybe it's just chapter one. Maybe there's something else somewhere.
No.
But it is a little on the short side. Maybe it was just somebody in an afternoon was like, hey, watch what I can make. But it's fine for what it is. It's not going to win over anybody new, but it's not going to alienate anybody that already loves it either.
And yeah, it's easy achievements.
Yeah, it's easy
achievements. If you're a fan of Radalika visual novels, it's a buy it.
Yeah.
No one else.
Works for me. All right. One last party cast game to talk about is called Sinker 2. Developed and published by Waller Digital, released December 11th on the Xbox One for $4.99. Sinker 2 is a minimalist puzzler evolved from the award-winning Sinker. There's just you, hooks, pucks, and various contraptions. Subtle differences within level themes drive different solutions to superficially similar scenarios. Trying to get me in a tongue twister there.
Nice.
That's pretty brutal.
Yeah.
Oh, tell us about Sinker 2.
The game's pretty brutal. And I say that it's not entirely true. I'm so tired. It's
You're
not. I am. It's not entirely true that it's a hard game, because it takes until about 40 levels in before it just starts raw dogging your face.
Damn. That's how you really feel about that role.
It's such a simple concept. The first game did the exact same thing to me, right? And then, like, people are smug if you go looking for a guide. They're like, it has multiple solutions. You don't need a guide. I'm like, no, I'm fucking confused. Help me. the first 30 levels it's not necessarily obvious, but it's comfortable problem solving, right? You have hooks. and you can push the button and the hook goes one way or the other and it grabs the puck and pulls it into the hole. And it's, when you look at it, you go, I know how to solve this the moment you look at it. But then it gets a little more complicated. There's multiple hooks. There's multiple pucks. And then all of a sudden you can swing the hooks around. But then sometimes you can't, even though you really fucking need to. It doesn't care. And you got to figure out how to get through this. And then by the time you get to level 30, it's like, don't put the square puck in the round hole. And you can't move this hook, but you can move that hook. But if you push this button, 17 other hooks are going to move. So get fucked. And then I just wanted to cry. And that was halfway through the game. Because there are 80, I think 87 levels total.
Damn.
And I was just, by halfway there, I was like, oh, fuck, I quit.
Live on a prayer.
These games are, they're so relaxing. And like, you just fall into them, sitting down and rolling through a series of them. And then when you hit that wall, you hit that wall. And that's just that. Nothing you do will solve that fucking puzzle. That's not necessarily good game design. And I feel bad saying that because so much of the game up to that point is like really solid puzzle game design. When you look at it, you know what your goal is, even if it takes you a couple of times to accomplish it. But once you start getting into those higher levels, it really starts to lose, like it feel like it loses that allure. And the fact that you have to just sit and trial and error it out takes away from what makes the earlier parts of the game so enjoyable. Because I definitely want to like sit down, sit back at 4 a.m. and just click some hooks and pucks and get through it. I will be doing the first 40 levels for the rest of my life because I'm never going to make it to 41. I'm never going to see 87.
I believe and I in never you. I
never beat the first one. Like I think I hit 45 or 46 in that one before I hit the wall at least. But this one definitely caught me a lot sooner. I wish it didn't have such a sharp difficulty spike so immediately. If it worked up to it the way it does in the earlier game, it wouldn't be as bad. But it really does, like when it hits you, it gut punches you. Beyond that, it's all very simple. It's all very relaxing. The music was relaxing. Hell, at one point, I was just like, I forgot that there was music. And then I was like, oh, yeah, there was music. And then I went in and turned it off and played my own. Because it's just simple and kind of like, it's one of those games that it's not trying to pull you into some elaborate world. It's like, nope, here's a grid, here's your puzzle, figure it out.
No.
And it's fine for what it is. My only real complaint with it is the sudden difficulty spike.
Well, overall, $5. What do you think?
It's $5. And at least you're going to get 40 playable levels. If you're not a hopeless lump of brain mess like me, then you might actually get more than that because there are 80 something of them. So yeah, I think it fits its price tag. It's plenty fine. It's just hard.
Hopeless lump of brain mess.
That's me. I'm tired. I told you. Look, Joe. I've been homeschooling 3 kids for the last 4.5 months. The fact that I can put a sentence together after doing second grade Common Core math all this time.
Common Core.
is a miracle in and of itself. But for $5, Sinker 2 is fine and I give it a buy it. If it's too hard for you, you still only spent $5, so fuck it, why not?
Yeah, works for me. Yeah. All right, that is it for you band of rabid jackals.
Brain mess.
Rabid jackals.
Yeah, I don't know what else to call
it. Rabid jackal brain mess.
Yeah.
Razzle dazzle.
I'm going to go do something with Tim. Does anyone have any final words?
Razzle dazzle. And here's the hoping that weird game shows up next week.
All right. And finally, we are bringing in Tim Ekibis to wrap up the show. Tim, how are you doing?
Oh, shit. You weren't kidding. We are actually recording. Fuck. Okay. Yeah. No, I'm fine. I'm good. I'm repaired. Prepared. Totally prepared. Prepared to repair. Let's go. Let's do this shit. I'm the last thing on the show again?
Yeah, you're the last thing on the show again this week. And then next week is just the last.
The last show.
Yeah.
Of 2020. Forever.
No, not forever. That would suck.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
You seem so invested in that.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it should. Yeah. I don't know, man.
Are you trying to find out what's going on with Star Wars?
I still am a little bit. Okay. But no, whatever. So well, some of it is because today is like the anniversary of when Last Jedi came out. So some people are talking about that. But that led to me getting into an argument. Not an argument, but we're having a useless, I guess, debate as to what the worst fucking Star Wars movie is. Just because I am a bit of an apologist for Attack of the Clones, which seems like what most people seem to hate the most these days. But I find entertaining in its own awful way.
I don't have an opinion on the matter. I've never been huge into Star Wars or Star Trek.
That's fine. Now is not the time to start.
Yeah. Like everyone's actually, going you know nuts what? Over now the Mandalorian.
Be, yeah, and that, I was about to say, now might be the time to start actually with Mando. But like, I would say a year or two ago was not the time to start. Like, it's just like, yeah, I don't know. That Last Jedi kind of set off like that was like the flashpoint activation of like an us versus them Star Wars. That like created like a fissure in Star Wars fans. Whereas before it was like, oh, everyone loves the originals. Nobody likes the prequels that much. There's some people that are like, you know, they're not as bad as you think, which I'm kind of one of those people. But, you know, everyone was kind of on the same page. And then everyone ended up on drastically different pages. And it was like, you know, the same rupture, not to be so grandiose with it, but it fell along the lines of like the fissure you see in American politics. And like everybody's on their own fucking football team. And like, you know, anyone who likes Last Jedi is a fucking dumbass social justice warrior, fucking I don't know what. Yeah, because people hate that movie, like hate that movie, and I love it. Sorry, it's great. But
I haven't watched it.
I don't want to get it, but it's just like it created a conversation. So now then at that point, like any time Star Wars or the prequel or the sequel trilogy or The Last Jedi, especially in particular, came up like it was a fucking conversation, and it was exhausting to have this conversation rather than just like enjoying Star Wars. And then Rise of Skywalker came out and was fucking terrible. That is the actual answer for worst Star Wars movie. But now everyone, I think, kind of is starting to move beyond that. Like, I think we're all on the same page of like, we'd rather just forget that the sequel trilogy existed just like as like a peace brokering thing. Let's not even talk about it. We're just going to move past it. It's easier for everyone if we just forget about it and talk about how great Mando is and then think about what might happen in the future. I think that might be where the Star Wars fan base is collectively headed right now. Just like the people who like the sequel trilogy, like just nobody wants to talk about it because they don't want to have the conversation. And that's fine. Whatever. Let's move forward. Right?
Yes.
Taika Waititi's making a Star Wars, and it's going to be great, probably.
Yeah, maybe.
Probably.
Probably.
Taika's pretty good at that making movies shit.
Yeah, can't go wrong.
You can't. I don't think I've not enjoyed anything that he's worked on at this point, so.
Well, what all has he done?
Well, he did, Thor Ragnarok is, of course, like the thing I think he's mostly known for. He did What We Do in the Shadows, the original series over in New Zealand. Jojo Rabbit, which is like my favorite movie from last year. Something of the Wilder People, which is another, you know, New Zealand movie, which is good. Yeah, he's got a few movies. He just hasn't become... He has become more prominently known in the West since Thor Ragnarok. So,
go figure. Yeah. It takes a Marvel movie.
It takes a Marvel movie. Yeah. So there was that. And then that you know, he kind of caught it. He directed, like, I think an episode of Mando. But yeah. Yeah, he did like Thor and Jojo Rabbit, and now he's working on he's working on the new Thor, Love and Thunder, and he's also getting a Star Wars movie. So, yeah,
lots of works.
I think the best is yet to. Yeah. I know you covered the Game Awards, but you didn't probably do we cover like the competing fucking endless Star Wars and Marvel announcements on this show last week? Did we? No. Okay. Well, we're not going to now. It's too much.
Is there anything in particular you want to discuss?
No. I like, as much as it seems like there is an overwhelming amount of Star Wars coming, I think most of it is, there's only two movies, at least that they talked about last week. There's only two movies, and that's not that many movies. And the movies, I think, are still kind of the big important part. I mean, it just seems like Disney Plus is going to get flooded with content from that and Marvel, but... You know, I think a lot of these series they're announcing are just going to be like one-offs or like very, you know, shorter things than you think. So I'm hoping it won't be, or there, you know, there's going to be some things that are for like more for kids, like animated stuff, like, or one-offs, you know, things that aren't for everybody or aren't going to take up too much mind sphere. So I'm hoping it won't be as saturating as it might appear. As someone who, you know, had quite a drip feed of Star Wars for years. And yeah, I don't know. There's just like a lot of Marvel stuff happening. And I think I'm more excited for Marvel stuff now than I was like this time last year, because Endgame was last year, if you can believe it. That was a 2019 film. 2019 feels like it was a very long time ago, but it was still only a year ago.
Feels, you know, so much longer.
2019, the New England Patriots. Feels like a lifetime. It feels like a lifetime since that happened, but no, it was just technically last year. But anyways, now without, you know, no Marvel movies dropping this year, none of the series, so it's been a year devoid of Marvel Cinematic Universe content. So I think I'm ready to get back involved next year as stuff starts hitting again. But I think it was nice to have this kind of like artificial forced pandemic break from all that stuff, just to give it some more distance.
Takes a pandemic to slow down Marvel.
It does, to slow down Disney. It's just like, but maybe they needed to. Well, what they really need to do is be broken up, because they own too much media. They need to be fucking dissolved as a monopoly. It's fucking ridiculous. I don't know, like, why did you let them buy Fox? Government, like, no, break. You need to just like saw this thing apart and like undo all the fucking shit they did to public domain laws, because fuck Disney. But I have to consume all their content anyways, because they make a bunch of stuff that I'm interested in. God damn it. Anyway, video game.
Yeah, you got one game to talk about tonight. Are you ready for this?
Yeah, are you ready for this?
I don't know. We'll find out.
Y'all ready for this?
All right, anyway, final game to talk about tonight is called Unto the End, developed by Two Ton Studios and Stage Clear Studios, published by Big Sugar, released December 9th on Xbox One, Switch, PS4, PC, and Stadia for $24.99.
Oh, it's on Stadia, thank God.
Yeah, also available as part of Xbox Game Pass. Unto the End is a challenging combat adventure game in the style of a cinematic platformer. The story is simple. Get home to your family. Master read-react combat and intense sword fights. Spot opportunities to trade and use items. An adventure told through your actions. How will you make it home? Tim, tell us about Unto the End.
Oh, Unto the End. So, yeah. I ended up really not liking this game. just really not. So it's a, you got a, and it's funny, because when Joe showed me a couple games to possibly review, I was like, oh yeah, that looks like that one might be the one for me. So you can never tell. Good thing it's on Game Pass. You can try it for free and find out if it's for you. Man, that could just be the end of the review. If we were,
we got to do a little more than that.
I think we got to do a little bit more. A little bit more than that. Yeah. No. Okay. So, Unto the End. It is a, you know, 2D adventure exploration sort of deal. There are elements of it. It kind of, most in practice, reminded me most of playing like Limbo or Inside. I think that's what cinematic adventure platformer means. I think that's what that's trying to say. And those are also games that I don't like very much and other people tend to like quite a bit. Though I did play through both of them. And so you're this dude who is trying to get home, and you adventure ensues. So they are trying to create this very like harsh kind of unforgiving environment for the game to be in, like so unforgiving that they put a fucking disclaimer like at the beginning that's like, just so you know, this game is not like other games. The combat is deliberate. You can bleed to death. You must remain calm to survive. And I'm kind of like, okay, dudes, fucking whatever. Like, it just, it felt like they were like making like, I mean, you know, they're trying to, I guess, prep the player's expectations, but it also a bit came off to me as like, we're putting like an excuse here up front. Like, so it's like, oh, if you don't like it, you're not being calm enough. You're not engaging with our different game enough. It just rubbed me the wrong way, like a little bit. Off to a bad start onto the end. So you're traipsing around with your dude. Pretty quickly you fall into this like underground series of caverns, and the game is not very, I don't feel like it, like you're fumbling your way through here. Like you'll figure it out. Like there was like some, it's just like sometimes it was hard to figure out like where to go. Like there, and this is a problem where I had in like Limbo and Inside as well, where it's like sometimes like the game wants you to do something and there's like a thing, like a specific thing you need to do in order to progress forward. But it is not always very apparent, at least to me, what that thing is. Like there was like an elevator platform or like a lift, I guess I should say. I don't know like what level of mechanical science these underground dwelling creatures had. So let's just say it's like a rudimentary lift on a pulley. Let's not give them more credit than what is due. And like it was basically like just like hidden in the floor. Like it was kind of a dead end, and like it was just a matter of like, oh, you have to stand here and you push the button and then it's like, oh, the floor goes down. It was kind of like, okay, but it was just kind of a guess on my part. It has a lot of like, gotcha, haha, killed you, traps and stuff. Like very, you know, one of the first things it does is like you step on some kind of a lever, which does not appear to be visible. And like some spiky log flips out of the ceiling and wounds you. And it's like, haha, gotcha. And I'm just like, yeah, la-di-da. And there's a number of traps like that. And it's a thing, you know, where it happens and the game does respawn you very quickly, but it just like kind of makes me like roll my eyes a little bit. I'm just like, ah, okay. Yeah, you got me. Got it. There it is. Okay. Thanks. And then you avoid it the next time because you know it's there now and you move on with your life. The game, you know, along with that kind of framework, layers in some like item collecting, you know, survival shit and also some combat. So the item collecting stuff does not, again, like, and maybe I'm missing something. I always like to think that I'm just an idiot playing games when I don't like them sometimes. It's like there doesn't seem to be like any indication if there is like an item sitting about. Again, it was a thing where it's like, oh, I'm going to push a button over here. And it's like, oh, there was some herbs or oh, there was some like dirt or whatever that I could pick up. But it's just like pushing a button. There isn't like a glimmer or any kind of graphical indication to say like, hey, there's some stuff here. It's just kind of like, okay, it feels to me like I'm just randomly deciding to push the button and then like, oh, there happened to be some stuff here to pick up and I picked it up and now I have the stuff. And yeah. So yeah. And you know, you have your inventory, there's items that you can trade with other characters, you can, you know, there's herb, or you can make tonics, I guess. You use herbs to make tonics to heal yourself when you are bleeding so you do not bleed to death. But where the game really grinds my gears, and I think what is kind of supposed to be like the central kind of gameplay feature is the combat, which I don't like. And you know, this is from somebody who I talked last week about how I play a lot of and enjoy a lot of Souls games, which have a very deliberate combat. And this has a very quote unquote deliberate combat. It's a situation where it's like, okay, you get your sword out, you got your sword, and you can hit high or you can hit low, and you can block high and you can block low, and you can feint attacks and you can roll. But if you get hit or you're disrupted, you can like drop your sword and like lose your fucking sword in the middle of a fight. And I think it's supposed to be like thrilling to be like, ah, shit, I dropped my sword. I need to like try to get it back in my hands and finish this guy off. When for me, it was like, oh, I dropped my sword. I'm just going to die and respawn and try it again, I guess. Though I did get the Chivo for picking up my sword in the middle of a fight. So I guess bully to me. I did pull that off once and I still got killed, still died in the fight. But part of this, and like, again, the game is designed intentionally to be harsh. So it's like, you know, I was presented with a couple encounters early on. They were like pretty easy. Like I think the dude wasn't even armed. It's like, okay, stabby, stabby, you're dead. But like the first real encounter that I ran into was me against like two guys in a really dark hallway, and they are both armed and they were just fucking my shit into the dirt. And I'm just like, this sucks. Like I don't even have the opportunity to like grab my bearings and like try to block in time. Like my first real combat encounter is just like two dudes. Like one, the first thing the guy does is roll to the opposite side of you. So you have a guy on either side of you. And I'm just like, come on, like this is so rude. And it was at that point, I don't know, I was like 20 minutes, half hour in, and I'm just like, okay, I can't deal with this right now. I think I had to put my kid in the bathtub or something. I had something to do, which happens a lot with me. I'm just like, okay, I got to put this game down. So I'm just going to quit out and hit start. And there is no quit out. You can't quit out. The only option is to restart the game from the beginning. What? Are you kidding me? Are you joking?
That's the only thing?
That is the only option. However, I, clever boy that I am, if you just quit out of the game, it does save a checkpoint. Like, if you quit out of the game and you load back into it, like, I was there back at that same spot, but I'm still just, like, baffled. Like, am I cheating the game system by, like, going to the Xbox menu and quitting out of the game because that's what I would like to do right now because I have something else to do with my life? Or is there like an expectation that I'm going to sit and play all the way through this game right now? It was weird. It was a weird thing. And it leads me to believe, like, you know, you can get into situations where, like, I don't know, maybe you're fucking lost. You know, you've pissed away all your items and you're just in a bad spot and you just need to start the game over again. So I guess then you would hit that button, but it still feels like there should be an option there to just quit to the menu, save checkpoint, peace out. You're an adult. You have other things to do. And yes, I do all the time. So I don't know. That's just weird. It's just weird to me. Makes me uneasy. So anyways, the next time I fired up the game, I tried that fight a few more times and I was like, no. So I decided, like, you know what? I'm going to restart this game from the beginning again. Because I was, like, kind of wondering, like, okay, well, maybe there's a way I can avoid even going down into this area. Like, maybe, like, there's branching paths, and that's why, like, maybe the game is, like, super short, and there's, like, branching paths, and, like, that's why they want you to go back to the beginning and whatnot. And it was going back through where I realized there's a point at which, like, you can stop at a campfire, maybe, I don't know, bonfire, the bonfire equivalent of this game. How Souls like, but there's an option at the bonfire that I passed over the first time that was like sparring practice. And cause I was like, well, I don't feel like I need to practice my fighting. This was the first, you know, my first roll through. I was like, I don't feel like I need to practice my fighting. The game will probably like throw some tutorial at me later. Lo, it does not. If you don't do that sparring practice, that game is not going to tell you shit about how to fight, because that sparring practice sends you into a flashback where you fight your wife. That sounds bad. that you spar does. With your wife. What I presume to be your wife, your partner, whatever. And that's where it kind of teaches you all the like, oh, block high, block low. Some enemies will fight in a sequence and they will get, or attack in a sequence and then they will get tired. And I'm like, oh, okay, fucking great. This might have been a better thing to surface a little more obviously. Or maybe that was, again, like, I don't know, obfuscating information. Figure it out, player. Playa. So I was like, okay, well, I feel like I have better tools at my disposal. And just like, The next time I get into combat, like, it was still like also just not having a good time, like even kind of like knowing what was going on at that point, because like your dude can only take like a couple hits before he dies from bleeding, I suppose, This is like the kicker was like, so like I'm fighting this dude and I kill the dude and I'm like, ah, I killed this dude that I was having so much trouble killing. And then like a tooltip came up like over the screen to talk about like bleeding, but except the game was still going on in the background. And then I got killed by two other guys. And I'm just like, Jesus fucking Christ, game. And the thing is like the restarts, you know, anytime you die in this game, it did not send me back that far. Like it was starting up again, but it was just like going back. I did not find myself enjoying the combat enough that I was like, oh, I just need to get the hang of this. Like I get what they're going for and that they want you to have like these duels where you really got to like read your opponent and try to fake them out. You know, go high, go low, block combo strings, you know, pick your spots and whatever. But I don't know. I just didn't like it. And you know, I try not to poke around to other reviews too much before I'm going to talk about a game because I don't want to influence my decision. But like seeing a guy who was like, oh, yeah, sometimes it takes me like a half hour to get through an encounter of just like figuring out like how to get through it. I'm like, man, fuck that shit. I don't want to do that. Like, that's too much. Like every encounter. So it's like I recognize, I see, and I enjoy like this premise that they're putting together of this like straightforward game where they're going to make things like tough. You got to survive. You got to get through like these hardcore duels and do this deliberate combat and collect resources. And like, so it's like almost like a survival horror like type deal. Maybe not horror, but, you know, survival. Got to use your resources sparingly. You got to watch out for traps. You really got to be like on your toes and be paying attention to survive. And I just like none of this shit worked for me at all. Like I fully recognize that. I don't know. This game is just not for me, man. It is not for me.
Damn. Well, overall, $25. I need a verdict.
No, I would like if I was not reviewing this game, I would have turned it off after like 20 minutes to a half hour and never turned it on again. Like if I had just downloaded it free from Game Pass and that was my experience from it, I would have been like, no. And I never would have went back to it and just been like, bah, no, fuck that shit. But I powered through some more of it to, you know, try to see if I could overcome. And I could not. I just found myself more and more frustrated. I'm just like, what? I do not like this game.
That's a bummer.
It does not work for me. But the good news is that at least it's on Game Pass, so you can find out if it works for you.
Indeed. Good old Game Pass. So give it a try. You might like it more than Tim.
Probably, because I really didn't like it. Nowhere to go but up. But you might want to watch it on that $25 spending that if you don't got Game Pass.
Unless you're on Stadia, because really, what else are you playing
Stadia! On Stadia? Yeah, sure. Spend money on Stadia. I'm sure that will feel well spent in about 6 months.
Oh, man. All right. Well, that is it for this episode. We made it through another one. Tim, thanks for being here, hanging out with us. Thanks to the PartyCast crew for being on here, chatting and hanging out and doing reviews and all that fun shit.
Next week, we'll wrap it all up with another wild party
cast. Spectacular. You're going to be there.
Wrap things up. Yeah.
Soon. Him and Purnell. Tim's going to be
there. I'm going to be there too. Yep, me and Tim. Also
you
me.
And Tim. It's going to be a rare dual appearance. Always thought you were different people, but nope.
Turns out I am the same man as myself.
Shocking. Shocking revelation. Do you have any final words to end the show?
No.